That's right. Unity. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. Now, if you are capable of supporting this broadcast, your support is necessary, absolutely necessary. I survive 100% since I started covering the issues that nobody else really has the gall or the balls to cover in explicit detail and give people a chance to just talk about what they know and just sit and frickin' listen. If you listen to everybody, you gain something that mainstream media never provides you with. Perspective. How many perspectives are you taking in? You don't necessarily have to agree with everything on this show, as long as you know what people are thinking and what's really going on in this world. Okay? That's the whole point of the show. If you support it, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and subscribe for a couple of bucks a month. Give us a regular income so we don't have to worry about, you know, whether or not we're paying the rent next week or whatever, as it is now. Or just make a once-off donation, and we'll give you some commercial-free archives there. They're on the website as well. You don't even have to pay for them. How about that? We'll give you something that you don't even have to pay for by paying for it. Right, that's ironic. My very special guest is John Ansell from treatygate.org.nz. Now, there was a couple of things I wanted to remark. As a Pākehā, as one half of a band called the Pākehāchis, which is a Pākehā and a mariachi, I think about Māoridom as sort of like this interwoven nexus of New Zealand. You know, there's it's iconic, really. You know, you think about grass skirts and the dancing and all of that sort of thing, and I think about all the Māori men and women that I've known that have always supported me in what I'm doing here with this radio show. And it occurs to me, they're not the only race in this country being suppressed. As far as I've seen, every single race is being suppressed because there's only a few people at the top of the power and influence structures in this country who have a vested interest in ensuring people do not have real freedom, real independence, because then they would threaten their dominance. That's what's going on here to everybody, not just Māori. John, are you there? Seem to have lost him. Okay, AFR, if you're capable of getting John Ansell back on the line there, we seem to be having a bit of a problem. But anyway, John, if you can hear me, just kind of speak up.
Can you hear me, Vinny?
Yes, I can.
You can? Oh, what's going on here, I wonder? You can hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I've been talking all along. Look, I think there are various ways of diverting the populace, aren't there? And sport is one that we embrace to a great extent here in New Zealand. And, you know, if you can set up a racial squabble, well, that's another one. And they're certainly doing a good job of that. I mean, I talk about apartheid Aotearoa, Aotearoa being the Maori word for New Zealand. Doesn't mean apartheid in every sense of what they had in South Africa, but certainly we have division right through our country now. I mean, now, sometime in the 80s, somebody decided that Maori would be an official language. Now it's so official that our teachers, the New Zealand Teachers Council, instruct their teachers to refer to children not as learners, and that's a comment itself on the quality of the education, but not as learners, but as ākonga. Children are now called ākonga. And, you know, since when, which idiot chose to replace the English word that everybody knows with the Maori word that nobody knows, or hardly anyone knows? But that's what they've decided. They make these unilateral decisions all the time. So the supposed equality of the languages is fast being turned into a total Maorification of everything. We now see that our country has been renamed by by journalists and by academics and by bureaucrats as Aotearoa New Zealand. Now, when did that happen? When did we give them permission to do that? You know, what you were saying about education was very true. Balance. You know, this radio show provides another perspective. Now, people can listen to this. They don't have to agree with everything you're saying or I'm saying, but they know that there is this other view. It's a shame that you have to be doing this, but, you know, you don't get that. In our schools and universities, they should be presented with both sides of everything. But they're not in New Zealand, and there's only, you know, it's the socialist Marxist side only, and they have formed a very strong bond with the Maori elite, or the Maori radical elite. So it's a sort of Maori Marxist collaboration against the rest of the people of New Zealand, who probably number at least 80%. But the views of 80% of New Zealanders, and it's always 80% whenever a poll is taken about various forms of Maori privilege, like Maori wards, in other words, Maori seats in local councils and all sorts of other forms, it's always 80% who come out against it. But that doesn't count. 80% doesn't count.
See, we're all not getting treated fairly. If one of us gets treated exceptionally well, have you noticed that? If people all get treated the same, there's no animosity.
A lot of people are hurting these days, aren't they, Vinny? A lot of people are hurting, but it's only Maori that seem to be able to access the special favours, and that is really upsetting those who are not Maori. Funnily enough, you know, there are a lot of poor people who are not Maori because they're not Maori, because they happen to be Samoan or Pākehā or Chinese or Indian, they don't qualify for the special benefit or the special scholarship. And
well, hold on a second.
Affirmative action gone wrong, I think.
What is the definition of racist or racism? Is it being negative to one race, or is it being in particular, or is it being positive to one race in particular? What's racist?
Well, I would have, until you said that and thrown a curveball at me, I would have said a racist was someone who hates a person of another race on sight just for being from that race. But certainly there is another sense of the word that you're talking about. It is racist to patronise, I think, to patronise people. A lot of Maori people contact me from Australia, from Perth, from Brisbane, because they're sick and tired of being lumped in with this griever group and being patronised. They're being, you know, it rankles with them that they should be thought of as so lowly that they have to be indulged with special favours. And that is a form of racism as well.
Not only is it a form of racism, but it also creates racism, because a whole bunch of ordinary New Zealanders who maybe don't know the facts of the manipulation of the situation actually believe through the media that it's all Māori doing this, and they become hardcore racist against Māori.
That's absolutely right. I mean, I know people in my sort of crusade who actually say to me, look, I am racist. I am racist now, you know, because I've just waged a campaign at the local school to get rid of this blinkered, one-eyed historical view, and the tribe that we've been dealing with have been so nasty about it that I am now, this is what this one woman said to me anyway, she said, now you can actually call me a racist because I'm just sick and tired of a lot of them. And I think that's a shame, because that group, that was Ngāti Whātua, I think, up in Auckland. Now, that group does not represent Māoridom. That's just the guys at the top of that particular tribe making trouble. But she, you know, she is at least honest enough to say that she has become prejudiced against anybody Māori. I'm sure she'd reconsider as soon as she met a nice Māori person. But, you know, yes, it is happening. It does happen, and it's a shame, because our fathers and forefathers tell us that they used to work hand in hand with Maori. They went to war with them. They have the greatest respect for them. They got Maori friends. But that's a previous generation. The present generation of Pākehā have been taught to patronise Maori, to bend over backwards, to give them a hand up, and to feel sorry for them. Well, if I were those Maori, I wouldn't be feeling terribly good about that. Would you?
I don't think so. No. It makes you feel like a belittled child or something like that. Like, oh, do you need a hand? Because a couple of hundred years ago, somebody was real rough to you and you can't sort out your own situation. We're going to help you out for the rest of your life. Oh, you poor little thing. You know, I think that's just freaking insulting.
I mean, I don't know how much longer the excuse my great-great-grandfather lost his land is going to wash, really. I mean, you know, I look at the Chinese people in my family, and bad things were done to the Chinese here in New Zealand. The gold miners that came out, they looked different, they sounded different, and they were treated as a sort of a second-class citizen, almost an animal. But the Chinese approach to this sort of racism seems to be very different. Their motto seems to be "Don't get angry, get even." let's beat these guys at their own game, and they're doing it here in New Zealand. If there's any resentment towards the Chinese, it's because they're doing better. and so there's these two different ways of handling age-old grievances. It's just a shame that the Maori way seems to be to forever moan about it and blame somebody else.
Well, the Maori elite way, anyway.
Yes. Yes.
And again, there's like a tiers of puppetry. Let me explain what I mean by that. You got one puppet dangling on the string who's at the end of a Maori board, and what he thinks he's doing is he's helping his tribe by imposing tribal values and words and terminologies and so on and so forth, teaching programs in local schools and helping out people at the WINS offices getting more welfare. And then there's one person above him who's on an even bigger pay grade, and he's negotiating things like massive treaty settlements for multi-million dollars and is getting paid $1,500 an hour to do so. And then you've got somebody up above the tier on him who lives in multi-million dollar mansions and is always fine dining and whining away. And then you've got somebody above him who controls all these massive banking interests and things of that nature or sections of the government. Then you've got people above them who have massive influences and culture and prestige and media to control everything. Yeah. And nobody's aware of each other. There's a whole massive control system that is being implemented here, and it's being done, in my opinion, deliberately to divide everybody. Okay, if you're Maori, I'll just come out and say it. You're freaking awesome, and you don't need the government. They're a bunch of useless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery mofos anyway, and any benefit that a criminal scumbaggery mofo offers you, I can guarantee you they're only offering you something because they want to take something from you, and they're using it as bait against you.
Absolutely right. Now, the problem here is tribalism, isn't it? All societies have gone through their tribal phases, and it ain't healthy, you know, including ours, including mine. I don't know where you're from, but probably England or Ireland or Scotland or somewhere. That's where I hail from, way back.
We're born in New Zealand, John.
Our clans and our tribes, but it doesn't work. Maori, you see, are still in that, and they've been encouraged to go back into tribalism by this Treaty of Waitangi claim process, which they decided in their unwisdom to distribute the money by tribe instead of by individuals. So suddenly people had to re-engage with their tribe, which they'd long forgotten about or some cases didn't even know about, if they want to get a share of the money. So it's a sort of reformed tribes, neo-tribalism. And the characteristic of a tribe is that everything is justifiable in the cause of your tribe. And that includes treachery, lying. I mean, treachery is an acceptable characteristic in Maoridom going way back in warfare. You know, you invite someone in, you wave the white flag, invite them into your pa to shake hands and make up after a battle, then you slaughter them all. And that happened time and again, and that's okay in the interests of the tribe. And that's what's happening now, is you get all sorts of dishonesty happening in the interests of the tribes. We've evolved a bit since the days of tribalism, and now we have nationalism, and you can argue about that. But that's where we've evolved to. At least our entire nation is together, but When you're embracing tribalism, you've got all these different factions, and they're all stabbing each other in the back, and it's not healthy. But that, and it breeds dishonesty, and that's what we've got in New Zealand. That's the essence of the problem, really.
Yeah, and guess who gets caught up in the whole process? The average person. They're not receiving any actual benefit from this grievance process, are they?
No, you talk to the average Maori, they don't get anything. In theory, they might qualify for their kid might qualify for an education scholarship. Some of them are quite ashamed of that, but you know, if you're given free money, you take it. But generally, the money goes to, as I understand it, the young bright ones to go through university and become advocates for the tribe, and spend the rest of their lives trying to screw more money out of the white man. That's where a lot of the money is going, sort of breeding intergenerational greed and resentment, and a sort of an us and them mentality. It's us against the white man. And
it sounds that's got very to be similar
bad for any country.
It sounds very similar to the way doctors and lawyers come into the world. Usually their father will be a doctor or a lawyer or something of that nature, and they go to the finest schools, and they wind up having a case of superiority amongst other people, having never really experienced any real hardship in their lives. And these people go on to dominate society, lusting after power and control because they've never had to feel any empathy or compassion.
It's an iwi elite. Now, you see, the Maori have made, they're an intelligent race. They made great use of the great gift of British law, and they've now sort of resolved in some ways their intertribal hatreds, and they've combined as pan-Maori to use the great gift of British law against the coloniser, and screwing him for all he's worth. And so you have a generation of iwi youth being bred, actually, to be the next generation of takers. And they're doing really, really well at it. But, you know, this can't really...
It can't go on forever, ladies and gentlemen. John Ansell is my guest. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. So what you wanna do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know? And flow like this, like this, like this. Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any.
Welcome
not
back.
Many, if any. How many dudes you know?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the one and only Vinnie Eastwood show. How many dudes you know roll like this? How many dudes you think flow like this? How many motherfrackers can host a show like this? Not many, if any. It's funny. My very special guest is John Ansell, and a thought occurred to me over the break, John.
Yep.
Have you ever noticed that the way that people wind up wasting their lives and having a lot of regret is if they're told a big lie and they're trying to fulfill that big lie in the belief that it will actually help people, and then later on they realize that the things that they were trying to do in order to help people were in fact the very ideas that were deliberately deployed in order to destroy their people.
That's the classic political thing, isn't it? I mean, I think everyone who has an interest in how the world runs wants to help people. It's just that their idea of caring, their ideas of caring may differ. You get a lot of people who start off over on the left there thinking that the way to care is to give people lots of money. As they get a bit older, they migrate across the divide. Well, I think this is, unfortunately, this is what Maoridom have embraced. The less wise among them think that the shoveling money at philosophy is what works. I relate it to being a parent. You know, if your kid says, you know, can I have endless chocolate, the socialist will say yes, because it makes them feel good, and it makes them feel good to be loved. the person on the other side will say, actually, no, you won't thank me now, but it'll rot your teeth, and you'll thank me later, and you defer the thanks. Well, I think that's the responsible way to go, and for that you're called, you know, you're called a heartless right-winger, or in my case, a racist, or whatever. I hope that as a result of what I'm doing, Maori will be a lot better off. If we were able to make a difference, if we were able to get the achiever Maori dominant in Maoridom, then we would be doing God's work, wouldn't we? I mean, I'm not religious, but that would be a wonderful thing to behold if Maori, who are currently far too heavily represented at the bottom of society, if they were to rise up in the image of their great leaders of the past, who unfortunately seem to all be dead. Now they're following these shonky thugs and extortionists. Well, if we could get them to follow the best examples of their people, we'd be doing them a great service. I've just looked at something that I wanted to raise, because what's controlling New Zealand is a sort of giant squid of about 8 different elites: political, academic, bureaucratic, legal, judicial, iwi, media, and church. And this is the point. The church are meant to be the ultimate carers for people, but the Anglican Church in New Zealand is at the forefront of apartheid. They call themselves the Anglican Church of Aotearoa, comma, New Zealand and Polynesia. In other words, with that comma, they see Aotearoa and New Zealand as being two different entities, and Polynesia being a third. Now, that is apartheid, isn't it? And if the church, who did so much for Maori in the 1800s, when they were just when they first arrived, they did so much. Christianity pretty much cured Maori cannibalism. It gave them another option. But it's very sad to see that the ultimate carers, the church, are sort of leading the charge in the direction of Aotearoa apartheid. In New Zealand, you see, we pride ourselves on being such lovely people. You know, when you live on an island, you can get fairly deluded about these things, and you're very conscious of yourselves. I say that before we can cure the racism here, we have to cure the nicism. The nicism is what I call this relentless desire to be nice to everybody and make no distinction between the people, between whether the people we're being nice to are also being nice to us. And you have these cunning griever Maori who are basically taking us for a ride, and they think we're mugs, just like Hitler would have thought that Neville Chamberlain was a mug. In New Zealand, unfortunately, we have in Parliament a chamber full of Chamberlains, as I call it. And that is, there's this huge reluctance to do anything which tackles this problem head on, because it might involve not being nice. So that's that. It's that perverse thing you were talking about. Sometimes in life, the right thing is the opposite of what it seems to be.
You know, in fact, I'm starting to find that to be life's recurring frickin' theme, John.
Yeah. And people like you and I, who bring this to people's attention, are condemned as haters and wreckers and racists. And that's just another thing that's the opposite of the way it seems to be. I believe that I am the most caring the most caring person towards Maoridom imaginable, because I am taking a risk and going out on a limb and telling them to pull their socks up. And that's a very hard thing for a non-Maori person to do and to think he can get away with. And I'm not getting away with it. I'm being heavily criticised. But I feel it's the right thing to do. And that would be true of many of the causes on your program, wouldn't it?
Well, it's like bravely crossing the Rubicon. Nobody else is doing it, are they?
No, well, that's why I thought, you know, I always look around and think, someone ought to do something about this, and what I really mean is someone else. But, you know, sometimes in life that someone turns out to be you, and at the age of 55, I've developed some boldness that born of intense frustration, I guess. I'm not a brave person, but I just feel in this particular case that someone is, that it can be me, it ought to be me, to at least try and act as a catalyst. And so that's why we do stuff, I guess, but I've been pretty much a coward up to now as regards standing up for what I believe in.
Yeah.
But this is too important not to stand up to, because this is the steady surrender of a nation here to basically a gang of of fractional descendants. That's what I was going to mention before. These intergenerational grievers. I mean, one of them is called Sir Tipene O'Regan, as you would know, of the Ngāi-Tahu tribe. Well, he was Steve O'Regan, IRA supporter, when he was at university. He is 15/16 Irish, and his daughter, Hannah, who's now Hannah, is 1/32 Maori. But when she was asked by a well-known New Zealander what she intends to do with her life, she said, "I want to help our people." And the well-known New Zealander said, "What, the Irish? They don't need any help, do they?" She said, no, our people. She honestly believes that she's Maori. Now, so being Maori is more of a religion here. It's not a distinct race. All the full bloods have more or less died out now because of the intermarriage. People are Maori by choice, and good on them. I mean, I don't decry people wanting to be Catholics or Muslims or Buddhists or Maori. It's a nice, warm, fascinating, fuzzy culture. Warm, fuzzy culture. There are nice dances and songs and so on. Too much of it is oriented towards violence, in my opinion. But if you want to be Maori, that's fine by me. But don't hold your hand up and expect to be reimbursed for the sins of your fractionally related ancestors. That, to me, is just dead wrong.
I was just thinking.
And of course, when you say that, then I'm accused. When I say that, I'm accused of eugenics, which is Hitler's thing. You know, it's blood quantum. How dare you refer to my blood quantum as though it's somehow relevant? Well, I say it's very relevant. If you're calling if your name is Steve O'Regan or Carwin Jones, and you're holding your hand out for money from your fellow New Zealanders when you are almost fully Welsh or Irish. That is very relevant, I think.
Yeah. Well, eugenics got a bad name after World War II. That's why the American Eugenics Society changed its name to Planned Parenthood and has since killed about 80 million black babies.
Questions. It just feels like such a con, doesn't it? When so many of the leading Maori, I've got a slide on my wall here, which I'm using as reference, as I talk to you, and there's Peter Sharples, and I've got her alongside a character from Coronation Street, the program, called Ina Sharples, and on my slide it says, he's a good lad, he's our Peter. Peter's dad, or granddad, I think, came from Bolton, in the north of England. Tariana Turia was Tari Woon when she was at school. She was the daughter of an American, and so on and so on. Ranganui Walker's father is Lebanese. You know, I mean, there's just intermarriage, and there are no, you know, I don't have two cultures, but all Maori have two cultures. I go back, for better or worse, all the way back to England on both sides, or back to Britain on both sides, but all Maori are bicultural, which is ironic. We are led to believe that our country is bicultural, when it isn't, it's multicultural. And in New Zealand, multicultural, I don't think, is nearly as bad a word as it is in Europe with the rapid Islamization, the radical Islams coming in, Muslims coming in. Here, you know, we are quite a comfortably multicultural society. It's ridiculous to claim that we are a bicultural society and that there was this partnership between Maori and Europeans. There wasn't. A treaty does not have partners. A treaty has parties. But there's this sort of, as a result of the Treaty of Wellington 1989, or the principles of the treaty, we are now instructed to believe that the treaty was a partnership, that Queen Victoria elevated to the rank of equal partners a bunch of cannibal communist warrior chiefs. Now, Queen Victoria was not of that disposition, I don't think, at the height of the British Empire. The Treaty of Waitangi was a sort of property for protection agreement, which basically said that the British will run things, but Maori will keep their property, and they will have equal membership of the British Empire, which was a remarkable gift for a native people at that time. Now, if I might continue, because it's just a continuing a train of thought that I've got into, did the chiefs of 1840 think that their property included the inventions of the white man 100 years hence, namely the 4G radio spectrum, which they now claim a share of? You know, there's a word in the treaty, the word taonga, Now, that word has been absolutely magnified beyond belief to mean anything we take a shine to. It actually meant their property. It meant property procured by the spear in the dictionary current at the time. But because of that word being so inflated, now Maori are making a claim on absolutely everything and quite shameless about it. This aforementioned Welshman was telling me that, you know, why shouldn't Maori have a share, be given a share of the 4G radio spectrum because it's always been there. I said, yes, but you wouldn't have found it in a million years, mate. At least your Maori side, not your Welsh side, they probably would have. But you know, how can you say that with a straight face? And yet they can. As you say, Maori have a tremendous sense of humour. And what this is a tremendous practical joke on their part. And as long as you can keep a straight face, while Chris Finlayson, the Attorney General and Minister of, well, I call him the Appeaser General, While you're moaning to him about how hard done by you've been, as long as you can keep a straight face, you'll get everything. So it's a practical joke, Vinny.
Well, you believe that, absolutely. Now, here's another element that I wanted to get onto. Fathering. You mentioned this idea of if you're dealing with people and they've got problems and the issue of parenting. Do I want infinite chocolate? No, I don't want infinite chocolate. Well, I'm sorry, you're not going to be allowed to have it because it's not good for you and you'll thank me later and you've got to take a little bit of a knock on the chin now. And incidentally, there is a massive defathering of of New Zealand just in general, and I think it's also particularly struck Māori hard. And what I found, statistically speaking, if you don't have a father figure, like a strong father figure in your life, you're something like seven times more likely to gain a criminal conviction in your time.
I can link that to a man in Nainai in the Hutt Valley called Billy Graham. Now, not the evangelist Billy Graham, but in some ways he is. He does his evangelizing through boxing. He has a boxing gym, and I took Don Brash out there once when I was working for him to see the wonderful work that he's doing with the local boys. Crime in Nainai is way down, graffiti and all the other forms of crime. He lives opposite his gym is opposite the police station, and the police have a lot less to do as a result of Billy being there. And so many of those boys are fatherless boys, Maori boys. All the tough guys in Nainai are in his gym being taught. You know, he says, take your cap off, look me in the eye, you know, you don't mess the toilet up, you do all these things and we'll get on fine. But no swearing. He's a Christian man, is Billy. And I was thinking, well, gee, you know, we made a speech about it. Don made a speech about it that I wrote. And you know, if there were Billies around South Auckland and Porirua and all over the place, there would be a lot less crime and a lot more Maori boys would have father figures. Because, yes, you're absolutely right. The welfare state and the incentive that it gives young mothers to have babies in order to get the dole, what then happens is that the father can be cast out, an abusive boyfriend comes in. It just happens all the time, everywhere. And the cycle begins. But if you know, the whole sort of socialist, feminist plot, if you like, has diminished the role of males generally, and I think now we're seeing that is not a good thing when it comes to parenthood. There does need to be a strong father figure around. Now, unfortunately, too many of the Maori dads are abusers, gang members, and so on. So the fathers aren't much good as a sweeping generalisation of that part of their community. But
unfortunately,
there are guys
John,
around like Billy who can.
We're coming to break, John. Unfortunately, we'll be. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment here for today, for this week of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Now, all the archives are available at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com/2013.html. That's thevinnieeastwoodshow.com/2013.html. That will give you the entire year's archives, all available there for you for free. 1 hour versions, like first and second hour, the full shows, and also short clips of the best segments from each shows. Pictures of the guests, so every time we have a guest on a webcam and they laugh at some point and appear to be enjoying themselves, that's the screenshot I decide to take for their picture. So it looks like everybody's laughing and having a freaking good time, which we are. And why the frack shouldn't we? Everything else seems to be going to hell. Why can't we just have a few laughs about how fracked we are? I'm a very special guest, John Ansell.
Thanks, Benny. I hope I've done some laughing because there's been a few technical problems. And I, one of the things is I can't hear when you're going to a break. So I think I've just been raving on into the commercials.
Something tells me you'd keep doing that anyway, John.
Yeah, probably. What are we going to talk about now?
You know, we've covered the thing with a lot of scope, and this is how I like to do the shows as well. Now, what I'd like to do is perhaps sometimes things don't come up in conversations, even though we'd like to say them. You know, there's never an appropriate moment, or maybe people might think we're a little bit crazy for saying it. You know, one of these extreme kind of things that we've seen that are very interesting, but we're just not sure if people will really take it the way it's intended. And so doing, we hold it back until an appropriate person who's perhaps a lot more understanding, who might know what we're talking about.
Or more reckless.
In my case, that would be the case. So do
Me
you have
too. I said once to a journalist that Maori have come from the Stone Age to the Space Age in 150 years and haven't said thanks. That got me in a power of trouble, but I think it was true. And I shouldn't have said all Maori, of course, although that's probably true from where they were. They've actually done extraordinarily well. That's what I was meaning as well. I mean, Maori could see that as an insult, or they could see it as a statement of the wisdom of their chiefs in signing up with then the greatest empire on earth and realizing that it's a bit like if a spaceship landed today. Vinny, you know, from Venus or somewhere. My God, the world just changed. What are we going to do? And some of us say, let's kill them. Others say, actually, that might not work because they've got tractor beams and they'd probably just wipe us out. Then one of us says, actually, I've been to Venus and it ain't half bad. And also, these guys are actually being quite nice to us. They're quite happy to do a treaty with us and you know, they'll run things by the standards of the universe because they're more up with the play, but they're going to give us our property and they're going to make us equal citizens of the universe. And by the way, if you think the Venusians are bad, you want to see the Martians. They're really bad, so we don't want to cuddle up with them. And that was how it was in 1840, if you like. The Maori were in fear of the French because the French, very much like themselves, very much like the Maori, they took no prisoners when they were offended, as happened in 1772 when a Frenchman went fishing in the wrong bay and got massacred along with his crew. The response of Marion Dufresne's remaining crew was to torch the entire Maori village. So the Maori didn't want the French. They wanted these soft touches called the British. And they got them, and they did fairly well, I think. But where was I leading with that? I've no idea.
You're talking about something that you normally keep from people for fear that they might misunderstand your radical views.
So I came out with that outrageous statement, but you know, and I wanted to do an ad which said, fed up with the Maorification of everything, which got watered down into, this is for the ACT Party, who I also left. People say I was sacked. I didn't. I wasn't sacked. I wanted to get out because I could see that they were just becoming a committee that was going to compromise everything. So that got compromised down to fed up with pandering to Maori radicals, which that was all right, but the editor of the Dominion Post banned it for asking that legitimate question. So in politically correct New Zealand, such jolting comments are really quite disturbing, aren't they? But I say to people, let's do away with all that. Let's not oppose them. Are you happy to pay a license fee for the use of your country? Because that's what all of this indulgence is. It's New Zealanders being asked to pay a license fee for the use of New Zealand, a Maori appeasement tax. Now, I don't think that's fair when New Zealand is not in great financial shape. You know, if I may divert into economics for a bit, I just did a study where I regarded New Zealand as a state of, if New Zealand was a state of a United States of America, Australasia, Britain, Ireland, and Canada, you know, the Anglo world, if you like, if we were a state, we would be of the same population as Colorado, British Columbia, Queensland. We'd be about the middle. Out of 82 states of that fictional union, we would be about 40th. But in terms of GDP per capita, which is the best way we've figured out to measure things, not ideal, but the best we've done so far, in terms of GDP per capita, out of 82 states, we would be 81st, above only Wales. We'd be poorer than Prince Edward Island, Mississippi, and all those other places. So in that position, when we have a Prime Minister who's saying that he's ambitious for New Zealand but getting us nowhere, we can't afford to fracture further, can we? We can't afford to divert, $1.5 billion a year to privileged members of one race only, when we are so far behind the rest of the world as it is, in terms this of so far behind the states that we identify with anyway, and we're sliding down the OECD as well.
I think we're our telecommunications record is also very shocking. We're like the third worst in the OECD, basically New Zealand is a third world country pretending to be a first world nation.
Unfortunately, that's becoming increasingly true. And where we're also one of the world capitals for teen suicide and teenage pregnancy. I mean, it's a lovely country. We live in a lovely country where a lot of people would like to be. But, you know, things are not perfect. Just recently I saw that graduates' degrees from New Zealand universities are now the least desirable in the OECD, and that is to say social degrees, such degrees as Maori studies, I dare say. Our social sciences are very poor, and that is because of this relentless political correctness, and which manifests also as a Maorification of everything. If we want to continue to be the capital of mediocrity, well, carry on. I don't think that's good enough. I don't think New Zealanders deserve that. I think we need a shake-up.
Yeah. Well, John, we've only got a few minutes left in the broadcast, and I just wanted to say this. Everybody who comes on this show, doesn't matter really what their beliefs are or what they talk about, my job is essentially to make sure that they feel happy and comfortable, and I'll just find agreements with them on what I can. And that facilitates a conversation that allows you to really understand what people really think. And my impression of how you really think about this is out of genuine concern for the country, genuine concern for morality in general, genuine concern for Māori, and a genuine lack of any other option because there's nobody else to do it, and also cop a heck of a lot of flack for it. Now,
well, that's a very fair and compassionate summary, and I do feel like that. I'm not Māori. I don't speak for Māori, and so Māori are not my prime interest. I'm interested in defending the good name of my forebears and my civilization, Western civilization. But, you know, I think we could all progress. I hope Māori do well. Now, I would like to introduce, if we can, the Constitutional Review just for a second or two.
We only have about 1 minute.
Yeah, well, the wonderful National Party, Māori Party Alliance, has come up with a constitutional review. It is fairly clear, having stacked the panel with Māori radicals, five Māori radicals, five Europeans, that's five Māori radicals to represent 15% of the population, five Europeans, most of whom are very pro-Māori, representing 70% of the population, one Asian person and one Pacific person. So it's heavily stacked. And clearly they are wanting to entrench the Treaty of Waitangi, into the Constitution. Once that happens, then all other New Zealanders become second-class citizens forever. That's really what got me going. When you asked me before, I forgot that bit. But that's the bit that roused me into action, the constitutional review, the threat that there will soon be no going back. We have to bribe the tribe for permission to do absolutely anything. Under the terms of the wrong version of the Treaty of Waitangi, not the real equitable version that was discovered in 1989, or at least the draft for the Maori version. The Maori version is the real version, and the Maori version says nothing about things being for Maori only. It says all the people of New Zealand, and makes no reference to forests and fisheries being owned by Maori. Now, the reason the state don't want that known is because they were in the business of giving away the forests and the fisheries at the time when that other draft was found. So the constitutional review is something that every New Zealander really who's listening to this needs to make a submission on and tell their MP, their national MP, that they don't want a bar of it. That they want a country where all citizens have the same rights, live under the same rule, vote on the same roll, and if their taxes are to be spent helping people, they should be spent helping people according to their needs and not their race.
In other words, actual racial equality. Isn't that interesting? John Ansell, ladies and gentlemen, treatygate.org.nz is the website. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you again sometime, assuredly.